Blog Talk Radio.
Your host, Merle Exit. Oh, it's a nice sunny day finally here in New York City. It's probably close around 60 degrees. It's gorgeous. I should be outdoors, but I'm indoors doing this radio show. And that's just fine. And yes, my chickens are, I think they're taking a nap. So they're not going to be part of this show unless they wake up and, you know, cluck me to death here. In the meantime, as for the show, well, okay, so I went to Talbot County, Maryland, and Talbot County is located near the Chesapeake Bay area, and there are some small towns to visit. There's Easton, which is, I guess, if you want to say, like the main town, because I think that's where the county seat is. Then there is Oxford, and then there is, I'm going brain dead. Wait a minute, I'll get it. St. Michael's. And the last place which I visited was Tillman Island. So that's what we're going to be discussing today. As a matter of fact, I have David McCallum, who's the owner and executive chef of the Tillman Island Inn. And he'll talk about the island, the inn, and the restaurant that he owns. But first, a message from our sponsor.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies. And that's no fairy tale.
Ah, yes, I miss those brownies. Yes, and you can get them at www.brownies.com. Okay, well, we're ready to talk with David. Hi, David. How you doing?
Hi there. How are you?
Oh, just great.
And
well,
the weather is so gorgeous down here.
What's the temperature by you? Just curious.
It's probably in the high 60s, low 70s.
Yeah, it's probably,
spring
yeah.
is finally getting here. Oh. And the crabs are starting to move.
Oh, good.
So it's great on Tillman Island because, as we say here, life begins where the road stops.
That's true. So in other words, what you're telling me is you're going to get crabs, huh?
Yeah, we're going to have crabs maybe next weekend. There are fewer around now, and they're getting more plentiful.
Well, you don't want to advertise saying that you got crabs.
We'll have them.
Get it?
We'll have some crab meat probably by this weekend.
Okay. But anyway, so what I want to first talk about is the island itself. It's like I guess that's the most remote towns of the within the county.
I like to say that, you know, when people ask me how far it is from Washington, I say about 2 hours and 20 years.
give us like a description of what Tillman Island is.
Well, Tillman Island is a wonderful waterman's village that still maintains a character, and still a very large number of people here on the island make their living off of the bay, either with oysters or crabs or rockfish or various products that it produces. That you know, there has been some development here. Some of the commieres, like me, are have changed it a little bit, but we want it to stay with the wonderful, remote, sort of relaxing atmosphere that it has always had.
Well, if I asked, like, if someone wanted to say, well, are there any kind of attractions?
Oh, there are lots of attractions, but one of the biggest attractions is doing nothing. people say, what's there to do in Tillman Island? And I say, nothing. And they say, what? And I say, how long has it been since you did a little nothing? And I think you sort of got that feel when you were here, that it's just a great place that has no urban feel to it at all. I used to teach at Columbia in New York, and when I would get here from New York, I thought, am I on the same planet? Because it just has such a different feel to it.
Oh,
but
yeah.
We have wonderful restaurants on the island, great places to stay, and sailboat cruises in the summer. You can rent boats and kayaks, so there's a lot of outdoor stuff to do, or you can just hang by the pool and read your book and do nothing.
And I visited, I guess, the one grocery store.
Well, yes, I mean, you might call it a grocery store. I think that
the general
convenience store is more the more the proper term, but you know, you can get a few things in a panic. I mean, you can get, you know, a good bottle of wine. That's one of the things that you want to be sure that you have access to. And as well as coming here to the inn and getting some wine from our wine list that has been recognized by Wine Spectator since 1996.
Now, before we get into the inn, I just want, because one of the things I had noticed in Talbot County and in going into that general store is having local products.
Yes, well, I mean, it's wonderful. As I said, we have all the wonderful local products that come from the bay. We also have great farms here that provide local produce in the summer, and, you know, great lettuces and all that sort of thing. It's concentrating on local ingredients has always been something I've done here at the inn and restaurant, even a long time before the whole locavore movement made it trendy and popular.
What made you decide? Oh, by the way, who is Tillman anyway?
What's that?
Tillman.
Tillman is named for Tench Tillman, who was George Washington's adjutant during the Revolutionary War. And the Tillman family owned the island. It was first charted by John Smith when he brought the sloop up from Williamsburg. So it has a long history and was first mapped in like 1600.
And how old is the inn?
Well, the inn has gone through a number of iterations. I've owned it for 23 years, but it was a Menhaden fertilizer factory at one point, a seafood packing house, and then was, as with most things, it was a sort of no-tell motel where people did lots of racy things. So it's had a long and checkered past, but it's a wonderful place to be.
So, and what I'm curious, so what made you, like, decide that you wanted to own an inn?
Well, I food and hospitality has always been my principal hobby. I'm basically a refugee from the healthcare world. And we actually saw the inn the first time the day it went on the market, and the view from here is just so fantastic that it made you want to stay forever.
Ah. So, and you're also the executive chef of the restaurant.
Yep, and food is right up there with the top priorities in my life and should be in everyone's. So, good food is one of the most unique and wonderful pleasures of life, but you know that.
Yeah.
Both from, New York is such a fabulous restaurant city, but I put us up against any of them.
Yeah, I would agree. But in terms of the inn itself, so I want to sort of walk people through the inn. Like when you come in, and the dog. Is that your dog?
That is my dog. Her name is Jasmine, and she's been here for almost 15 years now, but we are a pet-friendly place, so if you have a four-legged friend, you can bring them along, and we would love to have them as well as you.
And I noticed that she greets everybody.
Oh, well, you know, she actually owns the place. I work for her.
You know, I didn't tell you. I forgot to tell you. So I go up to the room to go to sleep, but first she wants to go into Lori's room to sleep there. And then I thought, well, Lori has a dog, I think they have a dog in the house. I forgot already. She's gone through so many dogs. And I thought, well, probably the dog detects. But then after Lori kind of said no, and she didn't, she just kind of went, yeah, okay. And she's following me to my room, and I'm thinking, I don't know what to do. I can't have a dog sleep with me. She wanted so much, I just kind of said, no, I can't. And she just kind of turned and just, I wasn't sure whether she was just, that she wanted to come into the room to make sure that I was,
a lot of times she'll go up to the room and she'll bark at the door and the people let her in, and she sort of does a turn around the room and sniffs the luggage to be sure there are no food products there that she might want or no illegal substances, and then goes out and goes to the next room. I mean, I've seen her go down, five or six rooms.
Really? It's so cute. And the cat?
The cat's name is Spot. Spot is a cool guy. I mean, most people think of dogs as he's and cats as she's, but we've got it reversed here. The dog's a she and the cat's a he. But he's wonderful. He's about 4 or 5 years old and hangs out to greet everybody and to eat a lot. If you notice,
yeah,
the cat is sort of a little, we need to get him on Michelle Obama's weight loss program.
That's okay.
But we don't let him, he doesn't get any fast food.
He just
gets the slow food that we make at the restaurant.
Oh, okay. So, all right, so now I'm walking into the inn, and you go upstairs to the rooms, but are there rooms on the first floor?
There are 10 rooms on the first floor, 10 rooms on the second floor, 10 rooms on the water side, and 10 rooms on the garden side.
Oh, okay.
You come into a lounge area and proceed to the bar and lounge where in the wintertime a big fire is roaring, and in the summertime you see the wonderful flowers and that sort of thing through the window, and just can either sit and relax there, or go to your room and sit and relax there, or if you're in one of the premium rooms, sit out on the balcony and watch all the wildlife, the birds and that sort of thing, because we had some people, I'm not a big birder, but we had some people here who were, and they said that they identified 35 species of birds while they were having lunch.
Really? Wow. I didn't even think about that. I probably would have just would have done that, too.
But we have the osprey back this year, and they are sort of working on the nest. They don't get real serious about it until after they mate to be sure that they're going to really need a nest this year. So, they're back. They came back a little early this year. They usually come back on St. Patrick's Day, but they were back 3 or 4 days ahead. And the male keeps bringing the female sticks, and she's rejecting, you know, about 1 out of 3 at this point. Like, what'd you bring me this stuff for?
You know, it's funny because I had learned, it's funny, I like with all the traveling, I don't remember where I had learned about the osprey in terms of that the male keeps bringing the female things.
Yes. Yeah, like, fish and sticks,
as opposed
to fish and
chips. And she says yes or no. Mostly no.
well, you know how they are. So anyway, so we're hopeful, and that's a fun thing to watch over the summer is to watch the chicks develop, and then finally in the fall, sort of have to get out of the nest and fly. Sometimes they're a little reluctant to do that. And one year, one of the chicks wouldn't leave, and so the parents just tore down the nest and left and left him sitting there on the platform, so he finally left. You know, that's what you do with the empty nesters, is you may have to tear the house down.
I'll have to talk. It's funny because I happen to have two friends of mine about the same age as I am. And they each have offspring that won't leave the nest. I have to tell them that's what they need to do.
That's right. Well, you know, Failure to Launch was filmed in Talbot County. So.
Really? Oh, okay.
Oh, goodness.
You also meet some quite interesting people, too, there.
Yeah, well, we have a nice clientele. Robert Plant from Led Zeppelin has been here a couple of times. He was here most recently when he was on his way to receive a Kennedy Center Award. And newscasters and a lot of other sort of, I guess, quote, celebrities come here because they love the anonymity of being on Tillman Island and being left alone, which is one of the great things. I mean, my staff, if there's someone of note here, or no, not to recognize them.
Oh, got it.
So it's a celebrity place where people can be non-celebrities.
Oh, well, that's good. I mean, people do need getaways.
Absolutely. As Robert Plant said, the first time he was here, he finally came down to the bar and bought everyone around a drinks and sat and chatted for a while. And he says, well, it's nice to be famous, but I would like to walk down the street sometime.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Well,
I want to get in now into the restaurant itself.
Well, it's I'm very proud of it. It's nice when you're able to turn a hobby into a successful business. And we've, as I said, had a Wine Spectator Award since '96. We've won Sante Magazine's Best Mid-Atlantic Restaurant several times. We've been featured in Gourmet, Bon Appetit, Southern Living, and countless sort of regional publications. I've been featured in New York Times and Washington Post, and so it's been recognized, but the biggest recognition that I look for are all of our fabulous customers who come here.
Well, now I did, just to help describe what I was eating, that's what we're going to have you do. And I, okay, now first of all, I understand you change the menu how often?
Well, we rewrite the menu once a week. We don't change everything, but we change preparations and change if there's something that is particularly good and local. I mean, last week we got local swordfish from, you know, off the Atlantic coast of Maryland, and so that was a fabulous feature that we had this weekend. But for Easter, the ramp season was in, which is only like a week, 2 week kind of period, so we did ramps on the Easter menu.
Now, just so people understand, what are ramps?
Ramps are forage wild food that is sort of like a spring onion, sort of a cross between an onion and garlic. And it's a wonderful, great harbinger of spring. And for our wine dinner at the end of April, we're going to do fiddleheads, which are also only available for a short period of time. And then in the summer, we have wonderful heirloom tomatoes and corn that's grown within minutes from the inn. And so featuring all these local ingredients, there's buffalo that's raised here on the Eastern Shore. There's a wonderful creamery that does yogurt and cheeses, and they're just fabulous products.
I had just had them on the radio. You're talking about the
about Chapel's Farm with with Holly.
OMG.
Holly's a wonderful person.
I'm trying to see. I have it. I'm gonna. I want to see if I could talk with the person who, I guess, the cheesemonger from. Well, it's like a local chain of high end supermarket.
Uh-huh.
And they have like 300 different cheeses.
Uh-huh.
So I want to see if there's a possibility of getting that cheese up here.
Well, that would be wonderful. I've also worked with Firefly Creamery, which is west of Baltimore, and their cheeses are featured at Whole Foods. So.
Oh, okay. I'll check that out, too.
Because the guys that run it are really nice guys, so.
Okay. So, and by the way, so people know what fiddlesticks?
Fiddlehead ferns. They're when the ferns come up, they have little curled fiddleheads. And it's a really nice delicacy that has a little bit of the taste of asparagus, but I mean, you know, this fresh green taste of spring that's so wonderful.
Okay. Just so people catch what that is.
Yes.
Okay. Now I want to get into some of the things. I'm going to try not to drool. All right.
Oh, come on, drool. I've often wondered if, you know, maybe I could do, you know, radio restaurant or, you know, phone restaurant that people could call up and I could just make them drool and they could give me a credit card and they wouldn't even have to come here.
Well, I want to start with the oyster stew that I had. Now, I understand you were telling me that the oysters were coming from they were farm raised.
Well, the oysters for the stew are farm-raised in the bay. The oysters that we use for the half-shell and Rockefeller are farm-raised in the Choptank River, which is, you know, maybe 5 or 6 miles from the inn, so that are wonderful, plump, delicious oysters. But so it's and we tend to use large oysters. I like big oysters, so we use counts, which is the largest size oyster, you know, by grade.
That were meaty.
Yes. And the oyster stew is wonderful. It's a very simple dish, but then many of the most wonderful things in life are simple. You want the main ingredient to star. You don't want to cover it up. But
right.
The oyster stew, I mean, you start with a little sautéed shallots and deglaze it with white wine and let that reduce, and then add some butter, and you can do it either with heavy cream, half and half, or milk, depending on how fattening you want it to be. And
what did I get?
You had it with the heavy cream.
Oh, I thought so. It's okay.
Well, we don't want anyone's cholesterol to fall too low. I mean, we figure it's our responsibility to keep it up.
Oh, okay. That was really...
Well, it's delicious and wonderful, but as I say, you can do it either way. And then you put some of the liquid from the gallon of oysters, or if you're doing fresh shucked, you pour some of the liquid in, you know, put the liquid from the shell in to flavor the cream and the stew part. And then just at the end, you put in the oysters and cook them just until the edges just begin to curl, because oysters don't really need to be cooked. They just need to be heated through so that it's...
Right.
So because you don't want to... Well, you don't want to overcook any kind of seafood or meat, for that matter. But, you know, it's really important with seafood to be sure that you only cook it to the point of doneness.
So is it, would you say it's like, let's say if you were having tuna and you, what's the word, you seared it, but
uh-huh.
that the inside was raw. Is that the kind of
well,
way
I
you
mean,
would
it's,
think
it's? I think tuna is best served rare.
No, I'm just saying in terms of when you're cooking oysters, is that the same kind of idea that it's like...
Yes.
So you're getting
you're just
like a
warm.
Raw oyster in the inside.
Yes.
Okay, that's the sense I got, because it's like, and even when they're fried, you have to know how to fry them correctly so that they're not cooked.
Well, so they're not dried out.
Yeah, that's what
and
I
then
mean.
And in cooking fish, we use the Canadian cooking method,
yeah,
which is you measure the thickest part of the fish, and then if you want it cooked all the way through, you cook it 10 minutes per inch of the thickest, or, you know, if it's like a half inch, then you're going to cook it like 2 or 3 minutes on each side to get it done. And if you're doing salmon or tuna, then I usually do it like 6 or 8 minutes per inch, because you want it a little rare in the middle.
Okay. Now, let's go to the oysters Rockefeller. First of all, where did it get the name?
Well, Rockefeller, that was back in the late 19th century in New Orleans, a French chef down there was having trouble getting snails that he wanted. And he said, well, you know, let me make something with this things that are all over the place called oysters. And so he invented oysters Rockefeller. It hadn't been named at that point, but it was the, you know, the era of the robber barons with the petroleum companies and all. And the first night he served it, the customer tasted it, and he says, "Rich as Rockefeller." And that's how it got its name. That's why it's spelled like, you know, the New York Rockefellers and not a different way. It's for that family name.
Oh, okay. So tell us in terms of what goes into, how do you prepare your...
Well, oysters Rockefeller, again, is a fairly simple dish. You start with shallots and bacon, and you saute that up. And then if you have too much fat on it, you pour that off and then add Pernod or anisette or any kind of anise-flavored liqueur to it and let it flame and the alcohol burn off. And then you add cream and reduce that and then add some fresh baby spinach to it to add it. Put it on top of the oysters with Parmesan cheese, and then just heat it on the broiler. Again, you want to be sure that you don't cook the oysters too much.
Wow. That was so good. Now, and just to, I'm wondering, like, with the oysters Rockefeller, this is your own recipe of, or versus, like, if somebody was looking up, you know, the recipe for oysters Rockefeller, would it all be the same, or is this your...
Well, there are a lot of variations on it, as with most classic dishes. This is my sort of take on it, but the original oysters Rockefeller had a lot of, like, vegetable purees and that sort of thing, but I think that masked the flavor of oysters. So if you looked at the oysters Rockefeller recipe and Galatoire's cookbook from New Orleans, it would be different.
Okay. Now we go on to the smoked duck Napoleon.
Oh, well, the smoked duck Napoleon is it's done with a berry horseradish jam, and I made this up when I had some berries that looked like they were going to go past their prime, and so I needed to do something with them, and thought that the sweetness of the berries with a little bit of honey and the spiciness of the horseradish and that sort of thing would be a nice complement. So you know, it's like making a savory jam, and then at the end you fold in horseradish and lemon zest, and then layer that with duck breast that has been brined in with herbs and then smoked, hot smoked, so that you get some cooking of it. You could also do it with smoked salmon. You could do it with a lot of different things, and then you just layer wontons and the jam and your meat, and then top it all off with a streaker of sour cream to give it a little bit of to give a little creamy taste.
Okay, and then the other one, actually, I didn't get the recipe for that. I had the... Wait a minute.
The pork with the coconut rice.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, you can take either jasmine or the coconut rice is the most interesting thing, and
that's
you want
what I wanted to talk about.
Sear,
yes.
And again, cook the pork. People overcook pork all the time. But the last case of trichinosis in the United States, I think, was, you know, 50 years ago, so I don't think we have to worry anymore. So that should be cooked to about 145, 148 internal temperature, which leaves the meat sort of pink, sort of medium, because you don't want to dry it out.
Right.
But then the coconut rice, you take the rice and about twice as much water or stock, or then in the case of the coconut rice, we do it with coconut milk to cook the rice in that. And then once that's cooked, and then at the end you fold in some flaked coconut, and voila, coconut rice.
Wow. It just went so well with
well,
that.
Well, I mean, the way that dish came about, that I was in, actually in Sam's Club, and they had champagne mangoes on sale. And so I picked up the champagne mangoes and came back to the restaurant and said, what am I going to do with these? So doing the pork with the mango sauce with the coconut rice and then a sort of stir fry of various vegetables, you know, with a little garlic and ginger to get that sort of oriental kind of thing going on. So that's how that dish came about.
And the last thing is the cake, that chocolate cake.
Oh, well. You know, chocolate, you know, that's one of the major food groups is chocolate.
Yes.
And so, you know, you have to have chocolate, and I use 40% Calabar chocolate in that. And it's basically sort of like a souffle because it's primarily egg yolks and melted chocolate and sugar. And then I think there's like 2 tablespoons of flour in 12 cakes. So just enough. And you bake them until they sort of smell right, if you will. But you don't want them cooked through in the center. And then when they're warmed and served with our homemade ice cream, then they're just a little bit, you know, sort of, sort of moist in the center.
Mm. You know, it's interesting because with the molten chocolate cakes, I found a lot of places you can get it. I guess like there's an instant kind of thing you can get at the stores to make it.
I don't know anything about that.
But they have things where it becomes obvious that the restaurants are not doing it from scratch.
Well, everything here at the Tillman Island Inn is made from scratch.
Which, that's what I totally appreciated. The food is just...
I don't make my own puff pastry, and I don't make my own phyllo dough. But other than that, everything is from scratch.
The bread? You make the bread?
Well, I make some of the bread sometimes. I do use a... frozen product because I don't have steam ovens and that sort of thing. And to make really good artisanal breads, I would need a whole nother kitchen with different equipment.
Right. So I guess you don't, are you doing the cooking or it's like when I'm watching those great shows there on TV, it's like you're in there screaming at everybody and telling them what to do, or are you doing the cooking?
Well, I do a lot of the cooking myself. I don't usually run the line during service, but I'm also not a yeller. I think that you get a lot further along with a little more subtle advice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my staff sort of knows that when I walk in the kitchen and I say, you know, I think we should do this, that means do it.
Do it.
But I love having input from my staff because
mm-hmm.
if you don't listen to people, you cannot achieve nearly as much because it's wonderful to have everybody collaborate and everybody be bought into the process.
So what you do in terms of the menu, that menu, it's not like you have your menu and then you say, somebody come out and say, and the specials of the day are?
No, we rewrite. If we have a change in the menu,
it's on
we
the menu.
Rerun the menu. We rewrite the menu because
right.
I personally, if I go to a restaurant and then they give me 3 or 4 specials, by the time they get to the end, I can't remember what the first one was. So I prefer to have things written down so that people can focus on them. And a lot of times, you know, you read a menu, read items on a menu a couple of times, and you see different things each time. Whereas if somebody is trying to explain a dish to you, it's a lot to take in on one sort of going over it.
And let me ask you a question. In terms of the wait staff, do you train them so that if I had any question, if I say, well, how is this cooked or stuff like that, would they know?
We try to be sure that the wait staff understands the dishes to that extent. But then if there's something they don't understand, they can go to the kitchen and ask the people
right.
in the kitchen or come get me to be sure that things are communicated properly.
In other words, like if I said, what chocolate are they use, they probably would have to come and ask you. But if I said, you know, how is this cooked, they would know whether it's, you know, fried or steamed or, you know, would they know what kind of, you know, the type of ingredients that go in it? Or if I said, is
they
there
would,
any
they would
blah,
know
blah,
most
blah
of,
in it?
Most of that, yes.
Okay. So, in other words, if I said, and by the way, I can have such and such.
Then an alert goes out to the kitchen. The person in the kitchen would consider all the things on the menu and be sure that what was being offered did not contain the forbidden ingredients. Because,
oh.
And then most of our dishes are made a la minute, so we can even do substitutions to be sure that they conform to either dietary preferences or allergies or that sort of thing.
Okay.
And being a refugee from the medical care world, I am real serious about allergies. I don't. Anaphylaxis is not something that I want to see in my dining room.
I don't blame you. Well,
it looks real bad when people fall down on the floor and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's not great, especially when you have somebody like taking photos. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
or that everybody has their cell phone to take a photo of it.
Yes.
Yeah, remember the days when you had to have a camera?
Yes. Yeah. Oh goodness.
But anyway, so and who is your? Do you have like your give? So we can give out your names. What's the name of your sous chef and?
My sous chef at this point is Eddie Erkenbrack.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a CIA graduate and actually did his externship from culinary school here and has been with me for a couple of years. So. And then Amato Iturbide is my sous chef, and he's a young Latino gentleman who is just incredibly talented.
Well, with all the food coming out the way it does, the talent is wonderful.
Well, and it's a wonderful thing to share. So we love doing it.
And by the way, do you you serve breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
We serve lunch and dinner, and then we do a continental breakfast for our end guests.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was like too early. I'm sorry that I didn't get an opportunity because I was curious about if, you know, with the breakfast as to, you know, because things are fresh, you know, and I went, but we got to get out of here. And it's, you know.
Okay. Well, it's wonderful. And it's probably about a 4-hour drive from New York. So it's a wonderful little getaway, and actually we have a growing number of people coming from both the city and the suburbs down here, and I will guarantee them a wonderful experience when they get here.
That's great. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And you'll see the stuff that I'll have that will be written about it.
All righty. Well, I look forward to seeing that and look forward to having you and look forward to having your listening audience come and join us.
Great. All right. Have a great day, David.
You do the same. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And yes, and we're going to now end our show.